are back in action tonight. And then they'll have a nice little break until Saturday. So a few days off. And that's relevant for someone like Nico Rantanen, who was back skating yesterday after a concussion over the weekend against Edmonton. Took a hit, high hit, clean hit, from Ekholm there in Edmonton. But he was back skating, and it's looking like Miko is going to make his return Saturday. So just one more game without him. But really the most pressing question facing this team right now, Mr. Philip Lindsay, is the goaltending situation. And it is a situation. And another opportunity for Georgie is tonight. He is getting the start, Bednar announced. What version of Georgie do we get tonight? And what do you think is on the line? Like, what's at stake for Georgiev tonight?
Look, it's been a rough three games for Georgiev, because the game that he, you know, one of the games he did play in Nashville, he got thrown out. All right. Had an episode where it was just probably not in his character, but you're just frustrated.
Yep.
Then he finally gets out of timeout. I call it a timeout for him.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, he's getting
the bounce
back.
It definitely was timeout, because, you know, Bednar said his the way he acted played into why he got pulled.
Yeah. So it's like, okay. Then I was like, he's out of a bounce back game, right? Georgiev seems to have these games where it's like, when all eyes are on him, like when he was playing against his former team and Igor, like,
he tries
to stand on his head at least.
Yeah.
So I thought he was going to have a bounce back game. Didn't. Then they got beat up again. Now, against the Dallas Stars, I'm not going to say it was all on Georgiev. I think Georgiev played a solid game at times. And then, of course, there was times like, where were you at? You know, you're out of place. But the defensive side of the puck has not been good for Georgiev.
Yeah.
And so I have to put that into consideration. So I think that Georgiev has to prove that he's, like, ready to go for these playoffs and that we can count on him. But also, he needs to prove to himself of the confidence and saying, I can do this. I'm the number one goalie for us.
Yeah.
All right? I'm going to prove it. I want everybody to trust me. And I think tonight, versus a team that they should beat, he needs to go out there and stand on his head.
Well, he wanted this opportunity, like this type of pressure, this type of opportunity to be a number one in the NHL. He was a backup.
Yeah.
He was Igor's backup in New York, and I know you referenced that in passing there. But, like, this is what it comes with. You have got to find your way out of this rut. And I agree with basically everything you said. Edmonton was ugly. Dallas was ugly on paper, but wasn't all on him. The Nashville game where he got pulled, it was what it was. I mean, it just was what it was. And don't forget, the Avs, after he got pulled, they rallied back and won that game.
Yeah, they did.
Like 7-4, I think it was.
This is when we started the controversy thing. Like, uh-oh.
Yes, yes.
Is there a goalie situation on our hands? You know, that's when we started asking about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and it's not a controversy, but there's something, and whatever you want to label it is whatever each fan wants to label it. But it'd be a controversy if the guy behind him was more established. The guy behind him has 14 career starts.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's actually preventing this from being more of a controversy, is just the lack of experience from Justas Annanen, that it's like, is there really enough there to make it into something like that? I don't think so. But I think he's also playing for the confidence of his teammates tonight.
Okay.
Around him.
Yeah,
you know?
Makes sense.
The McKinnons, McCars, you know, in a private moment when these guys are having a few beers after the game, like, what are they saying about this situation?
Well, what's going on with him? You know, what led you to throwing a puck into the stands? Like, where are you at with things? Why are you so frustrated? What can we do to help you out? And the first thing he's going to probably say, if he's being honest, is, hey, I need help from the defense.
Yeah.
I need help from the special teams. I need help because it's making me look bad. That's why I'm getting frustrated, because when everything's all said and done and the game is over and the score is 7-4, it looks like I gave up 7 goals by myself.
Right, exactly.
So I feel for him. But then there's times where it's like, Georgiev, like, you're out of place. All right, or you give up a goal that you shouldn't have, that was an easy one that we all thought you were going to save and block, but you don't. You know, so I think it goes hand in hand.
Well, in the last 138 minutes, Georgiev has given up 14 goals.
Mm.
All right, so it's not good.
No.
It's not good, and we're not going to pretend that it is. It's not all his fault. But there's enough there where this is the biggest topic facing this team. And if you were to like if someone said, hey, I went to the future, and the reason why the Avs didn't get out of the second round was because of the goaltending situation, would it be that hard to believe? We've been talking about it for longer than a little bit, you know?
I think it would be hard to believe for some people because of what we've done in the past, winning without having a star goalie. And I think everybody is living on that path, saying we've done it one time, we can do it again with the star power that we have in this front line up front. And if everybody is healthy, we can play and we can help Georgiev by what we do by scoring goals pretty much.
Yeah.
Outscore people.
Yeah. But guess what, man? And I understand that thought process because we did see that happen.
Yeah.
That was years ago at this point.
Yeah, it was.
And it's like it's that was such a special run and such a dominant run.
Man.
I mean, it was back.
I wish I was in here when you guys were doing this.
Yeah, I know. I know. It was so fun, Phil. And hopefully that next journey is starting in 11 days.
Yes.
11 days is the start of the NHL playoffs.
So tell me how you felt, right, going into that game when they won the cup.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, right now where we're at, right, with what we have going on. And I know not all the players are the same. We lost a lot of players.
Yeah, I think about half of them.
You know?
Yeah.
But the stars have stuck with us.
Yeah.
How did you feel going into that year compared to, like, right now with four games left?
Well, it's going into the year, it was the Avs couldn't get out of the second round. Going into the playoffs,
yeah,
the Avs actually lost 6 of 7 before the playoffs started. So I wasn't sure what we were in store for. The Avs had only disappointed for years in a row. I think it was 3 straight years of a second round exit.
Yeah.
Okay. And a couple of those years, I think the 1 year they won the President's Trophy, they were the best team in the league, and they were like Stanley Cup favorites, couldn't get out of the second round. Then they lost 6 of 7 going into the postseason. But I will always remember being at Ball Arena for game number one. Phil, what is my hair doing right now on my arms?
It's standing up.
Dude, every hair on my body right now in this moment
is standing up. Look at the hair on your head.
That's still laying down. But I will never forget, as long as I live, sitting at Ball Arena and watching game number one on Tuesday, May 3rd against the Nashville Predators. Phil, they scored 3 goals in the first 6 minutes. I've never been a part of it.
I bet you it was so electrifying.
Dude. Like, it was like you got swept up in it, like a tent revival. Dude, they won 7-2. It was it was so brilliant.
So they came out the gate.
Yep.
Letting everybody know,
yep,
this is ours.
Yep. And then the next game, Nashville gave them everything they had. And they lost in overtime, 2-1. And then the game number 3, 7-3. And I was like, oh my God. The Avs are just humming. And they didn't stop, man. They lost 4 total games. It was brilliant. So I guess you can't, to answer your question, and it is really good, like, how did you feel this time 2 years ago? We didn't feel great. We don't feel great now about the Avs.
We don't.
Like, not great. I don't know how you can feel great. So it kind of gives some hope that just 2 years ago, we weren't feeling great. They went on a dominant run. So we'll see what it looks like here in 11 days.
It's coming.
Crazy. Okay. Keep your eye on something happening below the radar in Denver sports. We'll tell you what that is coming up next.
Coors Field. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
This is my first rock and roll kind of song.
Yeah.
Back when I was younger, man, my mom put it on and I fell in love with the song. I do not know why.
Well, it's a great song.
It is a great song.
Is it like the outfield?
Yeah, the outfield.
Yeah. So good. And this has been Charlie Black. Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
Tonight.
So good. God, Phil.
Think about it, man. Him stepping up to the plate, walking out to the song. Nice weather out, blue skies. You know, the field. What do you call it, man? Is it the diamond? Field?
Yeah.
What do people call it at the ballpark?
Yeah, all that.
It's just beautiful. It is a beautiful view.
It is. It is. And I know how I sound when I, like, romanticize 2017 and 18, and that was, like, my first a couple of years here in the Rockies were bad for 6 years in a row. They got good.
Yeah.
Seemingly like overnight. They were a playoff team.
What was your first time?
A little bit. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
It was gentle to you.
Well, it's just so cool, man. I couldn't get it out of my head. I'm like, I live in a pro sports town now.
Yeah.
You know, and I was living in the tech center because we didn't know anything about where to live. So for our first year, like, I'm going to basically live at the studio. Let me live right next to the studio.
I forgot you told me about that.
Yeah. So there was times, I would, you know, walk to and from work, you know, just drive right up the road to the ballpark. Went to like 18, 20 games that year. And it'd be like a Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. And the place would have 38 to 40,000 people, and Charlie would walk up and everyone would just finish that, and they'd kill the sound and everything. Uh-huh. Oh God almighty.
The good old days.
The best.
The good old days.
The best. The Rockies did win yesterday, and there's something happening below the radar, all right, that I just wanted to bring up. I saw Mace tweet it, all right, Andrew Mason, and I was like, damn. And I'm just gonna keep my eye on this, all right. Last night, the announced attendance at Coors Field was 18,800. Rockies Diamondbacks. All right, why is that noteworthy? Phil, it's the fourth home game of the year. Fourth. And that is the second smallest announced attendance for a non-pandemic Rockies home game in 10 years.
Wow, man.
It was 300 people away from being the lowest attended non-pandemic restricted game at Coors in a decade. And it's the fourth game of the year. It was not sleeting yesterday. It wasn't a rain delay that started at 10 o'clock at night. It was a Monday night on a beautiful day in Colorado when the sun was still out when the first pitch happened. And I'm going to keep my eye on this one because it feels like the Rockies have had a coat of Teflon on them when it comes to no matter the product they roll out, they've always been able to draw. Maybe that'll be the case here again this summer, again. But that right there made my eyebrows raise.
Well, was it even truly 18,000?
No.
Like, we're saying 18,000, but if you were at the ballpark.
It wasn't even close.
Looking around.
No, it wasn't even close. That was the announced attendance, and you know, 18,000 tickets were sold at some point to the game, whether it's season tickets or whatever, but it looked like 10, honestly. And and it was a game that they won. I mean, Kyle Freeland was competent. He shaved 10 runs off his ERA, which is hard to believe. Came into the night with a 27 ERA. All right, now it sits about 16. Still not ideal, but we'll see. It's too early to be looking at raw numbers like that.
Get back there, man. You got to get it back little by little. You know, got to just find ways to get back to the top.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what that looks like. But an opportunity to roll out there and win again tonight. It's the Diamondbacks again, and this, you know, drives me a little bit crazy with baseball, man, because that's who the Rockies opened their season with.
Yes.
So we already saw the Diamondbacks, and they played a short series against the Chicago Cubs. They played the Rays, and now it's the Diamondbacks again.
I'm like, we're here again.
This is what drives me crazy with the sport of baseball.
I think that's why it's hard for people to want to continue to come to the games at times. It's like, we're playing the Diamondbacks again. It'd be different if it was the Dodgers now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Dodgers, how they are. Everybody wants to go see Ohtani. Mookie, you know, it's all those, so it's going to always bring somebody. But you're talking about the Diamondbacks right now, and it's just like the Rockies aren't good. The Arizona Diamondbacks are not a team that you just want to go see.
No.
So it's hard.
Yeah. And to think they actually used to play each other more. They used to play each other like 19 times during a year. Thank goodness they changed that rule. Charlie Blackmon had two hits, including his first home run of the season.
All right, Charlie.
Ryan McMahon, this is another thing to keep your eye on. That's a good story. Ryan McMahon had three hits yesterday. He is hitting .415. Again, really early in the season. Phil, that's the third best number in the entire sport of baseball.
Yeah, now that's the one that Stoke likes, right?
Yeah,
so, you know, Stoke has a
swing.
Little,
yes.
You know, a little freaky thing for it, huh? And then you guys start talking about people's butts and everything. I just like the back side of it.
Look, when you're breaking down pro athletes, sometimes you got to talk about their butt. This is Bud Black talking about Ryan McMahon.
He's been one of the guys who's been consistent. I think with Mac, we've seen overall pretty good at-bats through the first 11 games here. It's been a good two-strike approach. There's been a middle-of-the-field type approach. He got the hanging breaking ball against Tampa for the grand slam. He should pull a break. He should pull an off-speed hanging breaking ball. That ball should be pulled. He pulled it in the seats.
He pulled it in the seats. Love it. Now, the odds makers actually still have the Rockies to finish with the worst team in Major League Baseball. And they're plus 210. So if you bet $100 for the Rockies to be the worst team in the sport, and they were, you'd get that $100 stake back plus $210. They're there with the White Sox and the Oakland Athletics. Man, you talk about a sad situation, yeah. That Oakland situation.
That's bad, man.
It's real bad, man. They're playing in front of no one. They're playing in front of no one. And
they just got to pretend like it's the pandemic again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Crowd noise.
Pretty much. And then they're going to play in West Sacramento next year. Holy mother
of
God.
It's going to be a rough 2 years.
Yeah, no disrespect to West Sacramento. All right, are we seeing the first sign way in advance that the Caitlin Clark story has legs beyond college? Details next. Are we seeing the first sign way in advance that the phenomenon that was the Caitlin Clark story has legs beyond college? What a run, man.
It was.
What a run. Her last three games in college broke the previous record each time they played. Like, they went from what they do against Colorado was like 6 million, or no, it was like 9 million viewers against CU in the Sweet 16, I want to say. And then that jumped to 12 against LSU. That was a record. Then it jumped to 14 million against UConn. That was the new record. And then 18 million against South Carolina. That's the now record. What a story. But the question that we had when we came in here yesterday was, does this translate to the WNBA?
Mm.
The WNBA is right now an incredibly niche product in terms of mass consumption. Will that change? I thought it was interesting when I saw this story. The Las Vegas Aces, all right, they're moving their matchup versus the Indiana Fever to the T-Mobile Arena. Why? Because the Indiana Fever have the number one pick in the draft, and T-Mobile Arena accommodates 8,000 more seats than where the Aces actually play. Even though the draft hasn't happened yet, the Aces organization is assuming Caitlin Clark is going to be drafted number one. And this next season, when they come into town, they are preparing for the masses to come watch Caitlin Clark at the WNBA level. I've never heard of this ever in covering sports, changing venues because one additional person is coming into town.
Yeah, it's big time for Caitlin Clark. She's done a lot, like I said yesterday, a lot for this women's sports, a lot for the women in college basketball. And now the WNBA is not going to mess it up. They have a chance and an opportunity to put someone like Caitlin Clark, who's going to just bring more out of it. It's going to get them more views and put it in a situation where she's being seen even more, that more people are going to be going to the WNBA games, which then guess what? Like we said, you're going to start watching these games, start falling in love with other players that you like.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it's a domino effect. So they're doing something smart by that. And I'm just wondering for Caitlin Clark, it's like, how you feel?
Yeah. And here's the other thing. So, like, T-Mobile Arena sits 20,000 people.
Yeah.
They'll probably sell it out when Caitlin Clark comes into town. Probably. Who knows what it'll look like, but probably. Okay? Caitlin Clark's contract in the WNBA, even as the number one pick, it's going to be a couple hundred thousand, few hundred thousand, which we think of the sports that we cover.
Yeah.
And it's like, We were having fun earlier because Igor Shesterkin, the goalie for the Rangers, is one of the best goalies in the world. And we were talking about it because he has played the Rangers a couple weeks ago, and it's Igor against Georgie. Georgie's backup, and we got to talking off the air. It's like, how much do the goalies make? And we pulled up Igor's money, and Igor is making $6 million. That's how much Reggie Jackson makes for the Nuggets.
It's crazy, man. As the one of the best goalies to play in the NHL, and you're only getting paid $6 million?
Yeah, and of course we're putting only in air quotes in for everyday people. But we're talking about Reggie Jackson, who might be, I don't know, the 200th best player in the NBA or 150th, I don't know. I'm just spitballing. And he makes as much money as a top-tier goalie in the NHL. But then you look at someone like Caitlin Clark. They're shifting venues so they can put 20,000 people. They may make money. The Aces may make as much money that day as Caitlin Clark makes in her salary, even as the number one pick. And I just like, wow, that's talking about putting stuff in perspective.
And I was trying to look up. I'm trying to look up like the highest paid WNBA player. And I think it's from the Aces.
Okay.
You know, and I think if I'm right, and I could be wrong, she was rewarded. It was Young. I don't know her first name, but she was rewarded a 2-year extension, and it was worth $252,000.
Dude, that's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jackie Young. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Aces' salaries right now. You're talking about an average salary of anywhere between. I mean, there's players on the Las Vegas Aces that make $64,000. Mm. 64, 74, 95, 101, 100, 110, 196, 199.
So what needs to happen, Zach, for them to start getting paid in at least the millions? Like at least $1 million, right? Like what? Like something like Caitlin Clark has to come around, because if she is like how she was in college, she will be the highest paid WNBA basketball player. That's just how it goes. But what needs to happen, man, for them to get paid a little bit more? Because there's some good basketball being played over there.
I mean, there is, but do you watch it?
No, I don't.
I'll go so far to say I don't know anyone outside. Kamaje, do you watch WNBA basketball?
I do.
Okay, Kamaje is the only person in my life personally that watches WNBA basketball.
Mm.
That needs to change. And when that changes, and the masses start getting on board the way that they did at the collegiate level, you'll see that tide raise. And you want to know what this kind of reminds me of, this Caitlin Clark thing, and what it could mean for the WNBA? And pardon me, because I wrestling stuff comes to my head. When someone like Hulk Hogan or Stone Cold Steve Austin or John Cena or The Rock enter the fold,
yeah,
you do more numbers everywhere they go.
Yeah.
And that helps the last guy on the roster. And what they say in that business is, don't get jealous. You want him to thrive because he changes your paycheck. Those guys get paid up per house. Some of them are on salary, and then some of them get paid literally by the house, in air quotes. They come to Denver. What Denver do? You get a cut of the house. But if Rock comes to Denver, that puppy's selling out.
Yeah.
And that last guy on the roster gets a cut of the house. Mm. And I think it could work like that in the WNBA if it takes off in a way that it has not in the past, despite who came into that league.
Yeah, yeah. More investors too, man. You know, people just have to get on board. And in order to be on board, you got to see it. You got to be able to visually see what's happening. And someone like Caitlin Clark and some of the other young ladies coming out, someone like Angel Reese as well, if they can kind of get that bird magic kind of thing going on, it's only going to help the game out. It's only going to help the game out so these women get paid more money, the money they deserve.
Yep, and those two guys changed an entire sport.
They did.
Larry and Magic, they changed an entire sport.
40 million people viewed that game. Nobody has ever viewed it more times than that game.
And
right?
That was like 1978 or something like that, in the college national championship, still the most viewed national championship game of all time.
Crazy.
They changed the sport. They both went to the NBA and everything changed. So they saved it. They saved that league. So maybe one, if two could do it then, maybe one can do it. Not that the league needs saving necessarily, but,
to get
push
you
it.
Up there, yeah.
Yeah, to a
get
stratosphere. Yeah, yeah. All right. We waited 3 weeks for Jamal Murray to return. And now I don't want to see him. And I'll tell you why coming up next. We waited 3 weeks for Jamal Murray to return.
The return.
And now I don't want to see him.
Look at you. Look at you.
Uh-uh.
Lil Brat. Lil Brat. You've been banging the table. We're going to see Jamal Murray. I'm like, okay, he's not there. We're going to see him today. You finally get to see the man, and now you're like, I don't want to see him.
Don't want to see him. It's like, okay, 3 year old. Like my kids. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like a bagel of cream cheese. You get it there, he like thinks of something else. No, I want honey nut cherry. Like, what?
Oh, man, it makes you mad, huh?
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, no, you're going to eat this food.
Like, you'll eat that bagel.
Yeah, so you're going to go to me? I'll literally put my son to sleep if he doesn't eat. Like, if you
like
eat,
in a chokehold?
No. I wish. No, but if it's bedtime, because he likes to do this. He likes to really not eat when it's dinner time.
Oh, yeah.
But then when bedtime comes rolling around.
Oh, guess who's hungry?
I'm hungry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, dude, you just ate. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Dude, you
frustrating,
know,
man.
You know what I've been telling my wife? It's like, stop snacks. No snacks. Guess what? No snacks? Guess who's hungry at breakfast, lunch, and dinner? But if you eat throughout the day, and then you put the time in to do the dinner, it's like, no. I just had 1,100 goldfish.
Yeah.
600 Wheat Thins.
No.
Yeah. The joys of parenthood. I don't want to see Jamal Murray tonight. We're going to see him, and that's totally fine. That's totally fine. I'm being a little bit dramatic here. But my thought was, you have a back-to-back. It's the last back-to-back of the season. You have 4 games left in the season. Playoffs start when? 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
No? Mm-mm.
3 weeks.
Mm-mm. No. No, 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 no. I was putting that up to shoot it down. Like, 3 weeks? No, 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 no. 2 weeks? No, no.
2 weeks.
No, 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 no. 11 days. NBA playoffs start in 11 days, Phil. 11 days. Like, we are here. And if that man could not play a basketball game 5 days ago, I do not want to see him play in back-to-back games. Which game is more important? Tomorrow night against Minnesota? This team in Salt Lake has lost 12 in a row. Third longest losing streak in franchise history. Again, being a little bit dramatic, I understand. But him on a back-to-back when you couldn't play 5 days ago and tomorrow could be the biggest game of the year, I'm just not in love with the dynamic here.
Zach. You sound like my wife, right? I just don't want my son to go out there and get hurt. It's okay. Rub some dirt on it. We need to see what Jamal has and he can offer, right, with a back-to-back. We know Jamal's not going to play a lot tonight. They should dominate this game. And even if he was going to play, he's going to be on a time count, right? Yeah, he's only going to be playing for 20, what would you think, 18 minutes maybe?
No, because he played 21 the other night, he said he didn't reach it, so I bet it's like 25.
Okay, so 25 minutes. He may not even get there if they handle business. So I want to see him out there because I want him to get the stamina back, kind of get himself going, run around a little bit, get some passes in there, take a couple shots, play some defense, jump, do whatever it takes to see where you're at, and then you know you're going to have a hard game versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. And if you come out of that game, and the next day you feel really good, then we're good. We're right back with the action. We're right on time, and everything's ready to go. That's why I want him to play.
All that sounds amazing. What if he doesn't feel really good? What if he doesn't feel really good after this game? You're going to need him tomorrow night. You're not winning tomorrow night without Jamal Murray.
Okay, but you could say that when he gets to the playoffs. What if he doesn't feel really good after that first game in the playoffs? Are we going to sit him?
You know what's different about the playoffs than tonight and tomorrow? No back-to-backs.
This is the last back-to-back.
It is.
This is it.
It is. But I just, you know what it is? I'm letting the past, and I probably shouldn't do this, but I'm letting the past creep into the present on decisions that I would make because we waited 2 years as fans for Jamal Murray to be healthy. And all that happened is his first year back, they went and won the championship.
Yeah.
And now we are 4 games to the real race starting. And if that guy could not play basketball 5 days ago, I just go, ugh, you know, on a back-to-back. But it's all good. Go out there and play. You get paid to play. So I'm just fingers crossed, knocking on wood.
Was my man Glass? I think he's been dealing with some issues, Zach. We know that.
I mean, who's dealt with more injuries on this team than Jamal Murray?
For sure. But I think that's why they've held him out as long as they have.
You're probably right.
Right?
You're probably right.
You were at the beginning. You were like, they're precautionary, right? They're doing it for precaution reasons. And I was more on the, yo, I think there's something more serious to this. Well, now that he is back and after watching that last game and see him moving around It's like, okay, maybe it was precaution. Maybe they were just trying to take their time. So he is more of 100%. And now we're seeing it with the 21 points he played. He should play about 25 minutes again tonight.
Yep.
And then the Timberwolves, it's going to be the game that we get to see him. Hopefully, Aaron Gordon's back.
Yep.
And we get to see a really good game before the playoffs start.
And you're just touching on a piece of news. Aaron Gordon is not going to play tonight. All right, so he's dealing with a foot strain.
Yeah.
But Jamal, like the thing with Jamal, and you know what? I'm just being a nervous Nelly. I know that
being
I am.
Like my wife.
If your wife's a nervous Nelly, then put me in the same camp as your wife, because no one's had an injury history on this team like Jamal, outside of maybe Michael Porter Jr. Which, I mean, by the way,
not
like
wrong with it.
Dude, Michael Porter Jr. just flat out doesn't miss games anymore. And I'm going to look it up right now. Michael Porter Jr. may have played the most games of anyone on this team. Let me see. Yes. Michael Porter Jr., of any member of the starting lineup?
Yeah.
Man, what a testament to MPJ. No one, a part of the starting lineup, has played more games this year than Michael Porter Jr.'s 77. Played in 77, started 77.
And he's playing on a lot of minutes.
Oh, he is.
There's times where he's playing more than everybody on that court.
Yep.
I've seen that multiple times. So, yeah, it's a great thing. Would you consider him hurt prone? Since you've started
Michael Porter Jr. or Jamal?
Not Jamal. Michael Porter, MPJ.
God. It feels so unfair because he's played in every game this year.
Yeah.
I guess he might have missed one. Yeah,
I think
that
was a sickness.
And it might have been, yeah. I consider him, he's got it. Well, man, injury prone as opposed to having an injury history.
Yeah.
I know it's kind of semantics, but like the injury prone sounds more negative than he's got an injury history.
Injury prone means like you're prone to more injuries all the time, and injury history means you just had, like, everybody has a history. Everybody has a history in everything we do.
Thank you for explaining prone and history for me.
History.
What's your history?
Hey.
Got a history.
Zach is a little bit more taller.
I mean, look, Michael Porter Jr. has an injury history, but it feels unfair to say he's injury prone. Okay. Here's another one for you. Michael Penix Jr. has an injury.
Why you think I'm coming to this? Look at you.
Michael Penix Jr. has a real injury history.
Okay.
Is he injury prone if you haven't missed any action in 2 full years? That's kind of where I'm at with Michael Porter Jr. It's like, does he have a real injury history? Of course, he's missed 2 entire seasons with a back.
Yeah.
And really, if you include college, 3 entire seasons, because
it's a serious injury.
It is.
A back?
It's a back.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's a real injury history. But the guy just shows up and plays every night now. So to call him injury prone, again, we're kind of in the weeds, but it doesn't feel fair. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
no,
the difference
I see what
the
you're
two?
Saying. And that's what I wanted to get at, you know, with my boy Michael Penix Jr.
Okay, go there then.
Like, I'm just saying, like, you put up so much about this injury prone, injury stuff.
Injury history.
Injury prone
with Michael Penix Jr.
My man has been healthy for 2 years, other than getting banged up in the national championship. That's even more games than, that's like 4 more games more than a regular college player would play, right? And so I like how you have all this for MPJ and Michael Porter Jr., but Michael Penix Jr., right? Michael Penix Jr., everybody's on edge because of all his injuries, his shoulders, his knees. Like, that's a cop-out. It's a cop-out. Look at now. What?
The same thing that happened to Michael Porter Jr. is going to happen to Michael Penix Jr.
Which is?
You'll tumble down the draft, and otherwise you'd be picked at the top.
Okay.
They're very similar in that regard.
They are. It's like a spitting image of each other. And that's why it's like for Denver, it's like, yo, you have a top 5 quarterback sitting right in front of you that's going to fall to you. Okay? And you could look like a Cinderella story and have this man just come to your lap and just sit on it without you even having to stress or give up any draft capital. Because if it wasn't for the injury history,
yeah,
he probably would be a top 5 quarterback.
I agree he would be. I seriously agree. And I think he'd go over J.J. McCarthy. You know, where J.J. McCarthy has bumped up to 4, I think Michael Penix Jr. would be there. But guess what? History's history.
And guess what? People were shooting themselves in the foot with his MPJ, because now MPJ falls down to the Denver Nuggets.
Yep.
And now he's on an all-star team, and he's pretty good.
Yes. Yeah,
and now
good.
It's like, it's not fair. It's not fair. We could be doing the same thing. If we're looking at what the Denver Nuggets did, we can do exactly what the Denver Nuggets did, and we could do it in this draft.
But the difference is that Michael Porter Jr. Is not a franchise player. And that's what we're looking for in the first round at the quarterback spot. And I don't think, by the way, like if Michael Porter Jr. never got hurt, and there's no way of knowing this, but I don't think Michael Porter Jr. is a franchise player.
Even if
he wasn't hurt. Okay. I just don't believe that. Now, how much of things would be different with him maybe physically? Maybe if he never got hurt, he'd be skying over people and dunking at 6'11".
Yeah.
Like, you know, and his athleticism is really rounded into form here this year.
You're starting to see a lot more. He's just more comfortable because he's been able to stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know?
But when that man falls, I still hold my breath. I still hold my breath.
But you're going to hold your breath with Jamal. You're going to hold your breath with Aaron Gordon at this time.
I know.
And if Jokic falls, then we all know because that man don't jump.
Right. With the Nuggets, they just need to get to the start of the new race healthy.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit scarred, a little bit jaded. But, hey, man, guess what? These guys are pro athletes. They know what they're doing. Go out and play. They're playing a team in Utah that's lost 12 games in a row.
Mm.
It's the third longest losing streak in the history of the Jazz franchise. They've been playing basketball there for quite some time. But the other dynamic is Denver just doesn't win in Utah. You're talking about 15 cracks at a W in Salt Lake City since Michael Malone got this job, and the Nuggets are 1-14. That's almost impossible to believe. How do you think tonight goes?
Look, the Utah Jazz are missing everybody. They probably should be missing their coach. So we should be able to go in there, handle business, all right, so that our star players that are playing don't have to play that much. We need to start to find out about this bench, Zach. And I know it's a little different that Jamal's back, so the bench is going to be a little stronger with Reggie getting pushed back down.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm looking for Malone to kind of mess with the rotations a little bit more, put Jamal with some of the bench players, Jokic with some of the bench players, MPJ with some of the bench players, because we have to find this rotation out, and we only got three more games after this to do it with. And I know you're not going to be trying to do things like that versus the Timberwolves.
No.
You're trying to win that game.
Correct. That if there's no middle ground. If for some reason the Nuggets lost tonight, you want to see me be a nervous Nelly? Nuggets lose tonight, I don't want to see anyone play against Minnesota. Because they own the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
The Nuggets need to go 4-0 to get the number one seed. So it's like...
So would you want that? Like, I know we want them to win.
I don't...
But if they lose tonight, are you going to be upset?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be a bad loss. Because this should just be a culture win.
It should.
This should be a culture win. Is Jokic playing? Yes. Is KCP playing? Yes. MPJ? Yes. Christian Brown, Peyton Watson? Yes. AG? No. Go win.
Yeah.
Go win. That's a bad basketball team. I don't care about the histrionics of playing in Salt Lake and being 1-14. I don't care. Go win the game. And if you don't, then I don't even want to see these guys play against Minnesota. Because at that point, you've got three games left. You're locked into a top three seed. I'd be A-okay. But they're going to win tonight. And tomorrow is going to be a big game. And I can't wait, man. I'm going to be there. If they win tonight, I will be there tomorrow night. I can promise you. Here's a little bit from Michael Wilbon from moments ago on ESPN's Pardon the Interruption.
But Minnesota and Oklahoma City don't seem ready for that task to me to take out Denver. The Lakers, the Clippers, the Suns, they have the seasoning and most of the parts, it seems, to be able to do it. But are the Nuggets vulnerable to one of those three? I think that's a great storyline going in because, my vote for MVPL could be Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
I know the Joker's the best player in the league. He's the best player in the world. But MVP, if the Minnesota Timberwolves finish first in the West without Karl Anthony Towns, it's because Ant-Man has become a superhero in my mind. He is that guy.
Yep.
And I may vote him one on my one line for MVP, but I don't know if Minnesota as a team is ready to take out Denver yet, but what a series that would be.
What a series it would be. And with four games left, another name shoehorned into the MVP conversation.
I know, like, what are we doing, man? You see him kind of pause when before he said it, yeah, like, I'm about to make everybody mad.
It's like, do I even believe this? Not sure.
Should I say this? They're paying me, somebody looking like, okay, pay me $100,000, I should say this.
Yeah, he's getting paid a lot more than that, too.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I mean, Anthony Edwards, I agree with a lot of what he said there. He is that dude.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to know what, man? And this hits people's ears the wrong way, and I understand why. You know who a lot of basketball people are comparing Anthony Edwards to right now at this stage of his career? Michael Jordan.
Ooh.
And he is 22 years old.
Why would people be mad about that? Like, when you watch this man, and if you haven't watched him, okay, like I did, like I haven't at the beginning, but then now I'm watching him a lot, you start to see, like, okay, I can see why they're saying this.
It's just athletically, he's on a totally different plane than everyone else. And that's how Michael was when he first came in the league. He made other pro athletes look dumb. And that's what Anthony Edwards is doing. And you're talking about at 22 years old, averaging, I mean, he walked in the league as a teenager, averaged 19 points a game, 19 turned to 21, 20, 21 turned to 25, 25 is turned to 26. And he is the best player on a title contending team. But I think it hits people's ears the wrong way because you're talking about someone who's not done anything big picture and comparing them to Mike, but you're not comparing careers.
No.
You're comparing the eye test at 22 years old and what it looks like. He is he's the most explosive player this league has seen coming in since Russell Westbrook, I believe, where he is just a physical freak, man.
He is.
Shot maker, too.